and welcome to the Future of Business Energy podcast from Empower Business Solutions. So today we're talking all about electric vehicles and specifically why businesses should be considering them as part of their sustainability strategies. With sales of new petrol and diesel cars and vans being banned in the UK from 2030, there's been a lot in the news about EVs and how to support this transition, including increased investment to rewire the country's roads to triple the number of ultra-rapid charging points and plans for a further 1,750 charge points across towns and cities to support the shift to electric. As such, an increasing number of businesses are turning to EVs as a key way of meeting their carbon reduction ambitions. However, some challenges remain, with concerns around costs and range still prevalent despite the advances in EV technology over recent years. So the transition to zero carbon vehicles needs to happen, but what is needed to make it a reality? So today we're absolutely delighted to be joined by racing driver, broadcaster, motoring journalist Amanda Stretton to help dispel some of the common myths around EVs and give businesses the confidence to make the move to electric. So welcome, Amanda.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So firstly, can you just tell us a bit about your background and career and why you're passionate about electric vehicles?
Typically, there is no direct route to the answer there. It's a very roundabout story. I started actually racing motorbikes when I was 13. Never had any intention of following a career into the auto industry, but it just happened. I happened to be in the right place at the right time with the right opportunity. Racing bikes definitely sort of turned a switch in my mind. I knew that I absolutely loved racing and wanted to do it in my future. I just didn't ever think I was going to be able to make a living out of it. But as I say, right place, right time. I got involved racing classic cars as soon as I got my driving license at 13. Started winning quite a bit and doing very well on the classic scene. And back then, it was a small world. I mean, these days there is a lot of money involved, particularly also in classic racing. But back then it really was a very small world and everybody knew everybody. By this time I was sort of just leaving university. I had a job lined up, a proper job. Just leaving university, Channel 4 approached me and asked me if I wanted to present or do a screen test to present their British Formula 3 and GT coverage. Now, at the time, that was the highest national championships running in the country. And they had some big star drivers, which is why they wanted to broadcast it on terrestrial TV. And I just thought, yeah, why wouldn't I want to do this? I mean, I love racing. I'd be very happy following a career on my other chosen career path, but this just seemed like an opportunity too good to miss. And from there on, I had these like dual careers, if you like. I was racing, but I was also broadcasting, and I've basically done that ever since. And when I finished racing, I really hung my helmet up properly in 2008 after I did Le Mans. I still race for fun, but just not race at a top level. I started working for manufacturers as well, because There are just so few females who actually know what they're talking about. And I don't want that to sound unkind, but who've actually got the experience, who've actually done it, who have got a better than average mechanical understanding. And that's really where I started working for, you know, the big OEMs. And yeah, that's how I ended up doing what I do now.
Fantastic. So obviously we're here today to talk about electric vehicles. So sort of how did you get involved in sort of the electric side of things?
So Formula E is obviously the first sort of major electric race series. As soon as I heard about it, my interest was piqued. I have two children. I'm well aware that the world is changing, particularly for them. And I am a really competitive person. Now, I will compete in anything, whether it's Monopoly or racing cars. And what I loved about Formula E was that the potential for development and expanding people's knowledge was almost infinite. We've really come to the end of where we can take the internal combustion engine It has gone through years of development and fine tuning, and we're now looking at these tiny little fractions of marginal gain. Whereas when you talk about an EV and an electric powertrain, it's endless. I mean, there is so much opportunity for development. And I just loved the sound of it. I thought this was really exciting, notwithstanding the fact that when you actually look at it on paper, obviously there's other factors to take into account, but just the performance stats of an electric motor are so fantastic. It just lends itself to some great racing. And I think from a performance perspective, you know, electric vehicles will overtake internal combustion engines before too long once we've got weight and things sorted out. So yeah, I just love the sound of it. And that's how I really got involved with electric racing, and from that back into electric vehicles for the road.
So do you think then things like Formula E have done a really great job in sort of raising the profile of electric for, I suppose, the normal person to maybe consider?
I think so. I mean, it's a difficult one because to begin with, they had this awkward situation where you had to swap cars halfway through because the batteries didn't have the capacity. Now, the batteries actually did have the capacity, or it would have been possible for the batteries to have the capacity. The problem was that back then, nobody had any idea what a battery holding that much energy was going to behave like in a racing environment, that being they're under huge load. They are charged and energy is taken out of them at very high rates, therefore creating a lot of heat. And also what was going to happen in the event of a crash. So from a safety perspective, it was decided that they would have two smaller batteries instead. Now, I don't think that helped particularly in terms of people's concerns when it comes to road cars about things like range. Conversely, racing in city centres and really trying to market themselves in a very different way to traditional racing, I think did help a lot. Now they're into sort of generation two, generation three. There's one car with one battery that lasts the whole race. I think they are really making great strides forward. It's never going to be the only answer. Obviously, a lot of other things have to happen as well. But certainly, it is a very useful tool in helping people appreciate the benefits of electric vehicles.
Definitely. And you know, the UK has committed to this 2030 ban on new petrol, diesel car and diesel cars and vans. In your view, then, is that soon enough? And will we be ready to do that?
I mean, if I'm going to be a little outspoken, one of my big irritations is that what I've learned over the years is that the technology is there. There's no question about the technology being there. The problem is rolling it out at a scale where we can have national adoption. And I think the government have been woefully ill-advised, ill-equipped. I mean, they've been sitting on their hands because they've really left it to the private sector to do all of this. Now, private sector, of course, is only going to really get involved if there is the opportunity for them to actually have a business case. But if people aren't being encouraged into EVs, then why would they? You know, we know they're more expensive to buy up front. We know that the charging infrastructure is a concern for many people, and we know that range is also a concern for many people. So, you know, why would the private sector throw their hat in the ring when people aren't being educated and encouraged, and policy isn't there to actually get people on board with EVs? I mean, the 2030, obviously, it didn't start off at 2030, and I think a lot of people were rolling their eyes because it put the car industry in this ridiculous situation where we knew a ban was coming way in the distance. And therefore, people were sort of holding off buying new cars because people didn't quite know what to do. Now, of course, the manufacturers, it is hugely expensive to develop a new EV, particularly because the really efficient EVs that we're seeing coming to the market now are bespoke designed. So in other words, it's not a chassis or a car being retrofitted with an electric powertrain. Mm. It is an entire car designed around an electric powertrain. So the time and the cost that goes into that is absolutely colossal. So on the one hand, the car industry almost had their hands tied because people weren't confident about going out and buying diesels, which essentially was what they needed for their revenue to invest into EVs. Mm. So it was this stupid situation of, it was like, it was almost like we were sort of in ice. Nobody really knew what to do. Nobody knew how to move. Obviously now that's moved forward to 2030. That's great. Great from an environmental perspective. But then almost the car industry is now racing to try and catch up, because it takes around 10 years for a car from sort of concept, initial pen to paper, to actually be ready in a showroom for people to buy. So we are there, and everybody is scrabbling now to catch up. But it has been this sort of stop start. It's been very frustrating. And I think had the government really been bold, ambitious, and clear earlier on, we as a country would have been far better equipped moving to a 2030 timeline.
Yeah, no, definitely. And do you think then, where do you think the UK ranks then in terms of being ahead, behind of other countries in the ambition?
Well, I mean, everyone always cites Norway. I mean, they really have sort of nailed it. Now, conversely, it's important to remember they also have much, much higher taxes. So it's easier for government there to put the infrastructure in, and because the taxes on new vehicles is so much higher anyway. But having said that, I think we're actually making reasonably good progress. There are still, however, a lot of problems and a lot of questions that need to be answered. But I also think it's really important that we don't just focus on the negatives of how ill-prepared we are, and we can actually focus more on the positives of how much progress we've actually made to date. I mean, obviously, you know, if we're looking at people getting everybody into an EV, let's say in the next 20 years, obviously the ban comes in 2030, but not everybody's going to be making the switch. You know, there are thousands of people who live in towns who don't have off-street parking. Where are they going to charge their car? I mean, that is the most obvious, real big problem. And that needs some serious thought and planning, because our old city centres are not equipped for mass EV charging in one's drive when one's cars are parked at home. So we have to find another solution. Now, rather than looking at that as just a problem, we need to look at it as a positive. And okay, so how can we work around that? And how can we start thinking outside of the box? And again, this is where I think the government could do so much more when they are educating and just talking about this, because EV adoption isn't as straightforward as, you know, just changing your shoes. You know, you have one pair of shoes and you change another pair of shoes. You have to make some changes to the way you live, the way you think, the way you move. Now, this isn't a bad thing. It just means people need to be educated and know what to expect. So the idea of, you know, you can set off on your journey with 20 miles of petrol or diesel in your car and know you will go to a petrol station, 5 minutes later you've filled up and you've now got 400 miles of range. You just need to think differently about that journey that you're about to make. You need to make sure that you've charged in advance, thought about when you, you know, when you've charged. Are you charging at low rates? Are you charging at peak rates? You just have to think differently about the way we live and the way we move. And I think COVID actually, I think, has had quite a positive impact, because last year, as soon as everybody was in lockdown and everybody was sitting at home doing nothing, the changes to our natural world were so profound. People realized actually the difference that it was going to make. I think one of the problems is, I think people look at it and think, well, it's just one car. What difference am I going to make? When we were in lockdown and we suddenly saw changes to the air, changes to our wildlife, changes to the sky, it really made people aware. And I think that's why, you know, the recent survey about how many people are prepared now to buy an EV doesn't really surprise me, because I think people really see the benefits in moving.
So what, in your opinion, then needs to happen? Is ultra-fast charging the solution?
I mean, again, I am not a city planner, but I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to really look at the problems that we've got and think, okay, we've got two major areas where we need investment. The first is in rural areas, because The reality is that people who live in towns have got much better access to public transport. Therefore, their need for that density of charge points for EVs is still there because there's a lot of people, but it is not the same as people who live in rural areas who only have their own vehicle as their means of transport. And if you look at places in well, just anywhere in the country, I mean, obviously we can talk about rural Wales, which is woefully ill-served, but you know, most other places, you know, you haven't really, unless you have your own domestic charge point, there's a few in supermarkets, there's a few here and there, but there isn't really enough for people to confidently and comfortably rely on a charging network at the moment. So I think that's the first area. We really need to look at some rural areas. And again, this is where this sort of public-private question comes in, because obviously private sector don't want to invest in a EV charge centre when there's just simply not the footfall of vehicles going through. So we need some government support there. But then, of course, the other thing is on those major arteries and major roads, because the way the UK is laid out and our road structure is, we rely very heavily on those big motorways and big artery roads to serve to connect the country. And if you think of the number of petrol stations and the number of cars visiting those petrol stations versus the number of charge points that are currently there, it isn't anywhere near enough. So in order for people, and it's all well and good saying, well, people should take trains and whatever, but we all know that that's also a serious problem. You know, I've been looking at a train journey from where I live in Oxford to Nottingham, and it's just ridiculous at the moment because of the changes and having to walk between stations. And so it would be lovely if that was also an option, but the reality is it isn't an option for everybody. So I think those main roads, those main artery roads, are the other thing that really need some focus.
So what, from your point of view, are the top concerns around EVs that need addressing?
The first is obviously the cost. I mean, they are more expensive. People know that. I think people know. I know, but I say it all the time. I know that they're cheaper to run and obviously cheaper to charge. But there is, it does hurt. And I think in particularly in this time of uncertainty with jobs and furlough ending and just nobody quite knowing what's happening with the world, it is a concern that they're more expensive. So that's obviously the first. And the second is this whole charging range infrastructure. Now, again, range, I don't see range as a problem. You know, the majority of EVs now have well within the range capacity of 90% of people's everyday driving. So it's simply not a problem. And I do believe that with a little bit of thought and a little bit of change, those people who do those longer journeys can address that range issue as well by structuring lunch stops or meetings with where there is a charging point for them. So it takes a bit of change, but I think it's possible. So I think it's range, charging and cost. Those really are the main things.
So what role then do you think people's employers and businesses can play in this, as you say, particularly when you're talking about installing charging points, or those businesses that have large fleets, whether they're sort of van fleets? We were talking to DPD, and they've made a big commitment to electrify the fleet, but say it's not that easy. They can do it for sort of short range with the vans, but look at HGVs, and that's miles off and things like that. So what can businesses be doing to encourage the shift?
Well, I think obviously, I mean, the workplace charging benefits are great. So that we also know that there's the cost benefit to them. So for a business who wants to change, move their fleet to EVs, as you say, that there are a number of issues to take into account. And incidentally, I'm not 100% convinced that EV is the solution for all our transport needs, because I do think that when you talk about things like HGVs, I do think hydrogen is going to play a part, because it simply offers greater flexibility. You know, if you've got a heavy load, a big articulated lorry fully laden, using an EV powertrain is just not going to be as efficient and user-friendly as a hydrogen. But obviously, we've got these clean air zones coming in across the country. So for businesses who operate within those zones, obviously, there's a huge benefit to them because they're not having to now pay those charges. There's obviously the huge benefit of the reduced cost of charging, particularly when you look at using sort of a smart charging system where you perhaps have solar and battery storage in a depot and you can charge your EVs from there because you can slash your running costs dramatically. And I think it's also really significant that the more these big companies move to EVs, the better their public perception is going to be with their clients, very much leading by example. I think for more, particularly the people who are who have the greatest fears about moving to EVs, if they see their deliveries and post and whatever else coming via an EV, it really sets a fantastically strong example about what everybody else can do as well.
So does there need to be more support then for businesses to either invest in electric vehicles or to support employees to make the switch themselves?
I mean, there are these schemes at the moment. And obviously from an employee perspective, if you have an EV, there are benefits to your company, company car tax schemes as well. It just feels a little half-hearted. And this is, I suppose, the thing that irritates me. We need to make this change. And the government are, you know, they're making the right noises and there are these incentives and grants in place, but they're not quite enough. We really need to do a huge push, even if it's within a timescale. I mean, I do believe that if you say, right, for the next 5 years, we're going to double these grants or, I don't know, do something else that's significant, whether it be to a company who is looking to change a commercial fleet or whether it's a company looking at changing their car fleet. I think if we had that great big push, of course companies would be absolutely jumping at the opportunity to switch to an EV. And that would then help all the other things, all those other dominoes fall into place. It would hurt. And I mean, of course, we all know that there isn't a money tree sitting at the Treasury. And this is a problem. And of course, we haven't even touched on those things like vehicle, like road tax and fuel duties that currently contribute so heavily to government coffers. But I do think that the government need to lead with a very, very strong torch and light the way forwards.
So we've touched on some of the benefits for business, but what about things like attracting the next generation of talent or the next generation of customers or clients, particularly among an audience that's becoming increasingly climate aware?
Do you know, it's funny because I have two teenage children. They are so environmentally aware. I find it quite baffling. Obviously, I'm thrilled, but I find it slightly at odds with how, as you say, the sort of commercial world is responding to that. Because whether it be fast fashion or whether it be mobility, big companies are only just scratching the surface. Periodically, you know, I saw a very well-known trainer brand advertising a sort of recycled trainer. And the trouble is 90% of their trainers or 95% of their trainers aren't. I think we are only scratching the surface. I think the appetite with those young people is definitely there. They want to consume environmentally friendly. They want to be environmentally friendly. And I think by big companies really harnessing that, it's actually only going to help their business. It's going to make them stronger. And that is, I think, a big part of future-proofing.
And another issue we sort of touch on as well is sort of when those businesses that are part of a supply chain. So increasingly, potentially, you know, big retailers are increasingly saying, if you want to have your product stocked or things like this, you need to meet these certain sustainability standards. So again, it is EV, you know, and particularly in the public sector, when businesses have been asked to tender for certain contracts, they have to now meet certain ESG credentials. So what role do you see sort of EVs as being part of that?
Well, I think Polestar is a great example in that because with their new cars, they are giving a whole carbon sort of backstory of where all the materials have come from and what the what the footprint of it all is. So they're actually telling the story and they're being transparent about it. And I think they are leading the way, certainly in terms of automotive on that, because as you say, it's not just, I mean, one of the, you know, we mustn't ever just think about a vehicle and its tailpipe emissions being its measure of environmentally friendliness. Obviously, there's the whole manufacturing process that goes along with it as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And yeah, that was one of the things I got to ask. That has been one of the criticisms allegedly leveled at EVs, is that actually when you take into account the whole process, they're not as friendly as maybe they they claim to be.
We can make data say anything we want. Everybody knows that it's possible to twist numbers. But I mean, it is indisputable that once you look at lifetime emissions of an EV versus an internal combustion engine with a typical mileage, not your great aunt who only does 6,000 miles a year. I mean, because of course that's not typical. When we look at that, EVs are much more environmentally friendly, particularly when you start looking at green energy and renewables as a source of the energy going into them. But yes, I mean, all cars emit something, whether it be tire dust, fuel, brake dust, or tire particles. EVs do the same. And then, of course, there's the cost of manufacture, the environmental cost of manufacture. But it is much less than an internal combustion engine.
So looking into the future then, when do you think we'll see that tipping point then to more EVs on the road than petrol and diesel?
I mean, I think price parity on purchase is going to be a major tipping point. Of course, another thing that we haven't talked about is maintenance. You know, there's been a lot in the news recently about garages having to retrain staff because of the totally different nature. I mean, the reason an EV is much cheaper to run is because it's got much, much fewer moving parts. The main part of an internal combustion engine is the engine. The main part of an EV is actually the powertrain. It's the gearbox and the drivetrain. The battery and the motor actually make up a much smaller part. So people need to be retrained for that as well. And I think that potentially could be an issue. But for the most part, I think it's price parity. I think as soon as we get a real choice, and the choice isn't just, because at the moment the choice is, do you want an EV? Yes or no. Can you charge your EV at your home? Yes or no. And because that then rules out a lot of the people who answered yes to the first, it's still the elite few who can actually realistically buy an EV. Because the reality is, if you live in a terrace in a city at the moment and you have nowhere to charge it, and your workplace doesn't allow charging for whatever the reason, you could want an EV all you like, but unless you move house, you simply don't have that charging capability. So I think cost is going to be one. And then with that will then come the charging.
So do you think we'll end up seeing fewer vehicles on the road?
I think it depends on where you live. I mean, I live in a village in Oxfordshire where we have no public transport at all. So I don't see that there's ever going to be a change in the number of vehicles in my village, because I have no choice. I am too far away to cycle. That I have simply no choice. However, I think once we get into city centres, particularly as these sort of low emission and zero emission zones really come into force, I think it's going to have a huge impact on those cities. And I think, you know, we're just going to have to think differently about the way we move. You drive to a park and ride, car park, and you either get on a bus or a scooter or some sort of ride hail. We just have to think differently. And I think also as our delivery, you know, we've become so attuned to shopping online now. The idea of going into town shopping and having thousands of shopping bags that you put in the back of your car, I just don't think many people do that these days anymore. We are very happy to just click on our computer and have it delivered the next day.
One thing we did want to get your views on actually was the potential of technology such as vehicle to grid. So how important could that be for business? Can it be a real benefit?
Yes. I think it will be a huge turning point as well for businesses once that becomes, once that really sort of comes into force. If you look at our energy usage, our home energy, so if you look at how the grid performs, you have two really big peaks. through the day, one early morning when everybody wakes up and one sort of in the sort of evening when people are home, they're cooking dinner, they're sitting down to watch TV. Now, not all fleets operate in those times. And of course, one of the big criticisms or concerns that have been levied towards EVs is this idea that we're going to need to build a gazillion more power stations in order to charge all the vehicles. Well, we don't. We need this smart system so that when domestic people are plugging their car in, I can say I only want to charge it when I'm using renewables at whatever time of day. And that can then get topped up by a commercial fleet that is sitting parked up overnight, doing nothing, with potentially batteries with a large degree of energy still in them. So I think vehicle to grid is going to make an enormous difference, not just, I mean, it'll make a huge difference to the bottom line of companies who are able to really utilize it, but I think it's going to just make an even bigger seismic difference to the way the grid performs. We're not, those peaks and troughs will get leveled out an awful lot more. And therefore the amount of resource we need to fuel our power stations when they're not being powered, or our grid rather, when the power stations aren't burning fuel, is going to be less as well. And I think that's going to have a big difference, obviously, on all of our environment and air, which we all share, regardless of where we live and come from.
So finally, what would be your top three reasons for businesses to make the switch to EVs, particularly those that may still need a bit of convincing?
Cost. It will cost less overall. So that's my first thing. The second thing is the importance of how it looks to your customers as well, because I think that's significant. And thirdly, I would say leading by example. Yeah.
Well, that seems like a good place to wrap up. Thank you so much, Amanda, for your insights and expertise and compelling reasons to why businesses should be considering EVs as part of their carbon reduction strategies. If you'd like more information on how we can support your business on its path to net zero, please visit empowerbusinesssolutions.com. Thanks and goodbye.